Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 106 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minutes, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay-yay through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, is Todd Leibenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you. I think I will be here all week because, you know, I'm trapped in this building with, you know, international terrorists slash thieves, you know, keeping me from moving around. So I might as well join you, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, the State Department has, you know, agreed to release to your comrades in arms. So you never know. You might be out of here soon. You might be out of here before Friday. You never know.
One can hope. No,
well, I don't know.
I will stick with you through this, Rob. You and me together.
All right, there you go. So episode 106 begins with Big Johnson responding and ends with John spilling his soul. So we end the things on Friday with a lot of fun things happening, you know, but basically we have Johnson, you know, telling his men that they have the helicopters ready and they're going to, you know, start the assault. And basically in the next scene, Johnson picks up the CB at the end of Friday's episode and calls out to Hans and says, "This is Special Agent Johnson of the FBI. The State Department has arranged for the return of your comrades. Helicopters are en route as you requested." And Hans responds, "I hear you. We'll be ready." So I love the fact that both of them think that they are really, really clever at this point. You know, it really makes us as the viewers laugh that you know, Johnson is so sure of himself and Hans is also so sure of himself. They both have, you know, their own plans in mind. But we know that even if we haven't seen the movie, we know that both sides have some sort of alternative plan. You know, this is all a facade.
Well, and I just, when I opened up the scenes that you had for me here, I was just thrilled that I got to see Robert Davi right off the bat, because I was like, oh, I love Robert Davi. And I love him in this movie. In fact, I almost want, in this moment where he says, "This is Agent Johnson," for him to do the line that he did, you know, a few minutes earlier, where he says, no, the other one,
the other
like
one.
As if Hans knew, you know, the other Johnson, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, we talked about this last week, but I love that line. His delivery is just great, because you don't expect Robert Davi to deliver a line like that. You expect him to be much more proper, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Dobby's one of the funniest things about this movie, I would say. I mean,
right, but know, his character's not trying to be funny. That's the thing.
Right. It's not a comedic performance, but I just think that you know, he's got some of the best laugh moments. This scene is one of them, because, like you said, kind of the contrast between, you know, the fact that Hans has his plan and Johnson's got his plan, and in this moment we see them both kind of say, by the time they figure out what's going on, you know, they'll be in a body bag, or by the time they figure out what's going on, we'll be on a beach somewhere, you know. It's a great moment.
I love that they show Hans's face when Johnson is talking, and so there you see that he's listening to him carefully, you know. Basically, you know, you can see that he's like, you know, rubbing his hands together like, my plan is working, type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously we know that that's not what's happening, but that's what he thinks is happening. And I love that you see Theo in the back. Did you notice this?
Say that.
He's like fist pumping, and he's like, you know, slinking forward. He's like trying to listen in on what's going on and stuff like that. You know,
he's like a little fanboy back there, just basically like, oh, I want to see what he says next, type of a thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Cause I mean, I've discussed this numerous times, but I love the fact that we can basically tell that Hans hasn't let everyone in on the entire plan. You know, he's, I think, the only one who knows the entire plan. you know, Theo right. knows part of it. Carl knows part of it. I don't know about all the rest. It doesn't really matter what they all know and what they don't know. You know, I think the rest are all just hired mercenaries, and it doesn't really matter. It doesn't, you know, we don't care and they don't care what the plan is. You know, they just want to get their money and that's it. But, you know, yeah. Theo seems to be, you know, he knew all about the fact that, you know, that it's his job to get through the sixth, but no one told him what's going to happen with the seventh, you know, how to get through the mm-hmm. seventh lock. Now, I mean, if I was in Theo's position, you know, I would say to myself, okay, I'm risking myself. I know how to get through these six locks. You know, you have to at least tell me what your plan is to get through the seventh lock, because I don't want to get caught.
Well, yeah,
but apparently he trusts Hans enough.
At the same time, you know, I think all these guys, you know, they're just, you know, like you say, they're mercenaries, they're work for hire type of guys. So ultimately, as long as they get paid, you know, I mean, do they care that much? I don't know.
Right. It's true.
I want to just insert something really strange that came to my mind here. I was actually thinking about the other night when I was watching this, but I guess it had never completely gelled with me that this computer geek character's name is Theo. I'm sure I had heard it before, but it just didn't solidify in my mind. And it brought to mind that years ago, I mean, back when this movie came out, I would have been in high school, and my brother started calling me Theo, you know, just randomly. And I think the original origin of it was that somebody once asked me if Todd was short for something like Theodore. I was like, no. And my brother was there and he thought that was funny. He started calling me Theo. And I wonder if, you know, because we used to watch this movie a lot too. I wonder if, you know, that was something that you caught onto that name because of this movie as well. I don't know, but yeah.
Oh, wow. Was this an older or a younger brother?
This is a younger brother. But yeah, he just thought it was funny that someone would ask me if Todd was short for Theodore. So he started calling me Theo. Theo was also that we heard the name all the time, because back then was when the Cosby Show was on.
Yes.
And so Theo was one of the kids on the Cosby Show. But yeah, totally random thought there.
No, that's great. Well, I mean, come on. We also all grew up on reruns of Leave It to Beaver. It's Theodore Cleaver.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. No one ever called him Theo. Actually, no one ever called him Theodore either. They only called him Beaver.
Well, I think his dad called him Theodore when you know things were going right. Maybe, you know, like the way how when parents call you by your first and middle name, you know you're in trouble then.
Right. They would call him Theodore Beaver Cleaver. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, one of the things that Big Johnson mentions here is the State Department. So what do you know about the history of the State Department?
Nothing. In fact, I'm the type of person that when I'm watching the news and they mention these different departments and things like that, I get thoroughly confused just in terms of, okay, they're in charge of what now? You know, that type of thing. So, yeah, I'm at a loss on that type of stuff. I don't like to sit and watch the news. You know, I'll sit and watch cartoons any day over the news, you know.
Okay. That's fair. I completely agree with that. So the Department of State or State Department is the branch or department of the government, the U.S. government, that's responsible for the nation's foreign policy and foreign relations. Okay, it's the equivalent of like the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that you have in many other countries and things like that. They deal with diplomatic missions, negotiating international treaties and agreements. And they also have the person representing the U.S. at the U.N. Okay, it's located in the Harry S. Truman Building, which is just a few blocks away from the White House in the neighborhood of Foggy Bottom in Washington, D.C. And it was originally established in 1789 as the first administrative arm of the U.S. executive branch. Okay, it's considered to be among the most powerful and prestigious executive agencies. It's headed by who heads the State Department? Not the person's
Secretary
name.
Secretary of State?
There you go, Secretary of State.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Who is obviously a cabinet member, right? They're considered basically the foreign minister, if you want to compare it to what you have in many other countries. Currently, the Secretary of State is Anthony Blinken, who, you know, Biden gave the job to in January of 2021.
Every time I hear his name, I can't help but think of Winkin' and Blinkin' and Nod.
There you go.
You know, that's a
makes sense.
Poem, right? I think.
So, I mean, it's been around, obviously, since the beginning. There's so much to say about it, but we're not going to say about it because, you know, we're talking about a movie. We're not really talking about the State Department. So we can sort of, you know, just skip over all that stuff. So at this point, the shot goes back. We go back to Johnson, who says by the time he figures out what hit him, he'll be in a body bag. And I love the fact that the edit here is amazing because you almost have the exact same moment we hear Han say, by the time he figure when they touch down, we'll blow the roof. They'll spend a month sifting through the rubble, and by the time they figure out what went wrong, we'll be sitting on a beach earning 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Now I love the fact that in just these, you know, 10 seconds, Hans basically tells his entire plan. You know, he tells us, and I guess maybe right. Theo's hearing it for the first time also. I don't know. Does Theo know that they're going to blow? Well, maybe he probably knows that they're going to blow the roof.
You know. Well, like you said, it seems like, you know, each of these guys only have limited information about what their role.
No, but he knows that they're putting explosives around the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he doesn't know why, but, you know.
I was trying to think about what beach they're going to go to, you know, like, you know, because I have not done a heck of a lot of international travel myself. So I don't know what the beach destination of, you know, great international thieves like Hans Gruber might be. But
right. I was thinking about trying to, you know, find a list of countries without extradition to America, you know, that they could try to go to. But there's too many of them. You know, most of them are in like South America. My assumption is they're going either somewhere in the Caribbean or South America. I think that's their plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would think.
The beach is not my go-to destination for vacation. My wife loves the beach, but I can only take it for so long.
No,
I'm not a beach person. I'm like Anakin Skywalker, you know, because sand gets everywhere, you know, that type of thing.
Wait a second. So you want to be a moisture farmer? Is that what you're telling me?
No, not that either.
No. So you want something in the middle. You don't like either extreme.
Yes. I mean, where I live, we don't really have much in the way of beaches. You know, we have.
Well, you live in Denver. Come on, why would you have beaches? You guys have snow.
Yeah,
you have snow beaches.
We do have. We actually, I did go to a beach up in the mountains. You know, a few months ago, we went up to Dillon, Colorado. And that's where you have Lake Dillon, and they have a little beach there. But you can't swim there. It's just a, you know, if you want to go sit on the beach, you can boat there, but you can't swim in the lake because this is actually, you know, where, you know, it's the water supply for Denver. You know, the snow melts off the mountains, goes into this man-made lake. The original town of Dillon is under the lake now. So
really? Wow.
You know, yeah, I mean, because... You know, we don't have big bodies of water here in Colorado. So, you know, and our biggest source of water is the snow that falls in the wintertime. So I always tell people, you know, if it doesn't snow here in Denver, that's fine, as long as it snows in the mountains, because that generates the tourism industry. And then when it melts in the summertime, that's our water supply.
Okay, that's fair. And so you get fresh, cold water. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh yeah, well that's the thing. If you do, you know, you can wade in this lake. You can't swim in it. You can wade in it. And I did. I took my shoes off and walked through that. And that water is cold. It is freezing. And that's because, again, it was originally snow.
Wait a second. So you're saying that you're not allowed to go swimming in it because they don't want you swimming in water that people are going to drink, but you can wade into it, and you know everyone can put their dirty feet in it.
Basically, yeah. You know.
Okay. Is there any logic there?
No,
oh, okay.
But, you know, is there logic to anything in our world? Of course not.
Some things, but not everything. You know, depends on what. Certain things do have logic. So one of the things that Johnson mentions here is a body bag. So what do you know about body bags?
Only that, you know, I hope to never occupy one until I'm not conscious enough to care.
Okay.
But honestly, when I hear that
that's word, what we aspire bag, to. That's what we aspire.
Yeah.
To. I know what you're going to say.
I think of the Karate Kid.
That's right.
When I hear body.
Get him a body bag.
Here's a body bag, Johnny. Yeah. You know. So.
Yeah. That's right.
Sweep the leg.
You and I, 80s kids. We know these things.
Well. And 84, man. That's 1984. Best movie year ever for me.
There you go. Okay. Now that I know. I know that it is. Okay. So, a body bag. Do you know any other names for a body bag?
I do not.
Okay. It can either be called a cadaver pouch or an HRP, a human remains pouch. Okay. It is a bag designated to contain a human body, and it's used for storage and transportation of shrouded corpses. Okay, when do you think the first use of a body bag was in America? The first documented use.
I'm going to go back pretty early. I'm going to just guess during the Civil War.
You are right. Excellent. Hey, there you go. It was the purpose of the bag was stated on the patent. It was a patent application that was dated July 21st, 1863. Okay, and the patent it states that the purpose is to facilitate the carrying of badly wounded dead soldiers. Wait, badly wounded dead soldiers? I don't think that's sort of redundant.
Once you've reached the point of being dead, I don't think how badly you're wounded matters much anymore. But
yeah, hurriedly away that could not otherwise be quickly removed from the want of proper conveyances or difficulty to procure boxes or coffins for removing the dead, as the boxes or coffins cannot be so easily transported or handled on the field of battle.
Well, and I was trying to think back too, and I'm no historian, but I'm thinking that I seem to remember hearing things, in history class or maybe in like the Ken Burns documentary, I don't know, but just about how there was just a shortage of coffins type of thing, that there were, there was just so much, so much death that they were kind of in short supply. So maybe that's, the thing that moved forward this innovation.
Could be. Yeah. It doesn't mention that here, but during the Cold War, okay, they had vast reserves of body bags because they were anticipating millions of fatalities from nuclear war. And there's actually a poem, a protest poem written by Adrian Mitchell called 15 Million Plastic Bags. All about the wasted body bags. That's pretty. The term is used for fashion, and other bags worn on the body. Okay, you could have like a sling body bag or an across body bag, and this sense has no connection with either of them. So sometimes people, for in fashion, will wear things on them, and they're also called body bags. But
I've seen like dresses made out of garbage bags and things like that, but that sounds different.
Yeah, it could be, that's what they're referring to. I don't know. That's just crazy. And I love the fact that he says, that they'll spend a month sifting through the rubble. And as unfortunately we know that something that Hans doesn't know in 1988, the bombing in Oklahoma City, you had 9/11, it takes a little longer than a month to sift through this much rubble. I think Hans is just guessing.
I guess I never thought about it in that much depth before in terms of, he says we'll blow the roof. And, I guess, are they trying to destroy the entire building?
Yes.
His
plan is that he's gonna blow the roof and the whole building will collapse. Maybe Osama bin Laden actually saw this and thought of the idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I tried doing a little bit of research to see how long, it took them to sift through the rubble of either Oklahoma City or 9/11, but I couldn't really find any, definitive answers on that. So I decided to leave that research alone. So then the shot changes and we get a shot of John's feet, which are like bloodied. And it looks like it's still even dripping. It looks like there's like blood still dripping from the whole thing. You know.
I told you I was thrilled with you for giving me a scene where I got Robert Davi, and then I was instantly angry at you because the movies that, or I should say the scenes in Die Hard that just make me shiver and wince and I want to turn away every time are the bloody feet shots, you know, and there's several moments peppered throughout the film, you know, after that happens. But I don't know, just those shots of the bloody feet and he's hobbling around and there's blood smearing across the ground.
But it's not real.
I don't care. Those are the moments that just make me shudder in this film every time. I don't know why. I see blood in all kinds of movies. Why blood pouring out of somebody's feet? Why is that so, you know, so sensitive for me? I don't know. But yeah, I've always been bothered by the bloody feet moments in Die Hard.
Right. Okay. I understand. So there's all these newspapers on the ground and one of the headlines that we can see, it says, the Southern California Guide to lower Heating Bills. You know, I tried Googling that, but didn't come up with anything. So I don't know if that's a fake ad or, you know, maybe it was something at the time, but I just couldn't find it.
Mm. You know, I'm just impressed that you looked at the newspaper.
Yeah, there's another one that's sort of cut off, but we can see the words, this test, they something, money into their transmissions. I don't know, something's just cut off there. So you can't really see the whole newspaper. It moves a little. No, it's even longer. Forget it. We see some of those words that I cut out, but there's even more words that you can't see. So forget that. I'm not even going to try to decipher that one.
So I guess these newspapers were left behind by some of the construction guys that are working on these floors or something like that. They read them on their lunch break or something.
Yeah, but they just left them strewn all over the floors in the bathroom. You know, last week we noticed that there was a ladder in the room and there's a like a mirror on the side that just doesn't make any sense of why they would have the mirror where it is, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then John like stands up and you can clearly see, I mean, Bruce Willis does a great job of pretending to be hurt here. You know, you can really feel his pain, you know, like you mentioned before about the blood bothers you or whatever. But if you look at it, you can, you know, he's acting very well as if this really hurts him.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that throughout the film.
Yeah.
There's just, you know, there's a lot of these action films where, you know, guys get beat up. They've got big cuts that are, you know, gushing blood and stuff. And the next moment they're moving on and something, you know, they're onto something else. And it's like that never happened. And one of the things I have always appreciated about Die Hard, about the Die Hard series in general, is that you feel Bruce Willis's pain. And as he goes through the movie, you see the effects of the injuries that he goes through and him fighting his way through it. I've always thought that's very effective about this.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you on that completely. And then he picks up the CB and he goes, pal. And first of all, he groans right before he does it. He goes, pal, yo, pal, you got a minute? You know, like, and I've mentioned this so many times that I'm going to keep mentioning it. You know, they keep forgetting that this is a party line. Everyone can hear anything that's being said.
Yeah.
You know, there's no privacy here whatsoever.
And I always thought, you know, isn't there something that, you know, they're both cops. Isn't there something that, you know, they just would universally know as cops as a way of getting onto some other channel that at the very least Hans would have to hunt for and, you know, would not instantly know what they're doing. Again, I have no way of knowing whether or not such a thing exists. I'm not a cop. I've never been, you know, in a family with cops. I don't know these type of things, but I always thought shouldn't there be some unwritten language that John and Al just know so they could get off the party line, so to speak.
Yeah, completely. I think so. But, you know, it just doesn't work that way. I think that's why they sort of figured out that in the second movie, they would actually have a code to punch in, you know, to make it a little more, you know, scrambled, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
So Al responds, I'm here, John. And then John responds, listen, man, I'm starting to get a bad feeling up here. You see, he must have seen Star Wars. You know,
that's what I'm thinking too. Anytime anyone says I've got a bad feeling, it's Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. You know, he I love the fact that they decide at this point to let him, you know, open his heart up and start to spill his guts, because he is starting to get a bad feeling about the fact that he's not going to make it out of here.
Well, and again, I think it's one of the things that makes John McClane a bit more
Human.
believable character than what you get in a lot of these 80s action films, you know. I mean, I love Arnold, I love Sly, I love all those guys, Jean-Claude, whatever, you know. I love the entertainment that they've given me, but you know, if you ask me who feels the most believable, the most like a real person doing all these things, Bruce Willis, John McClane, you know. And it's, again, it's the moments like this that do it, because he's having second thoughts about him trying to take on all these guys, and wondering if he's gonna ever see his wife again, and all that stuff. So yeah, it's very genuine.
No, I think that's one of the reasons why this movie works so well. You know, because of the fact that he's such a believable character, and he's an everyman. He's, you know, he's one of us, that type of thing. You know, he's not this guy with these bulging muscles, you know, like Arnie Sly or Jean-Claude, as you mentioned. And, you know, he's just a guy trapped in the wrong, you know, the wrong place, wrong time. You know, that type of thing. So he continues with his I guess confession or last will and testament or however you want to call it. He goes, "Listen, man, I'm starting to get a bad feeling about this. I want you to do something for me. I want you to find my wife. Don't ask me how, but then by then you'll know how. I want you to tell her something. I want you to tell her that, you know, like he too many times here. You know, he sounds like a podcaster."
Well, thank you for saying that, because I will say, I know I am bad about umming on my podcast. I can tell you exactly what a waveform of me saying looks like, because I edit it out of so many of my podcasts, and I leave a bunch of them in too, because it's just not worth the
I have
effort
the
on
same
some of
issue.
them. But I say so much. It's so embarrassing every time I edit, because I know I'm umming. And the other thing I say is, you know. I go, you know this, you know. And so that I'm terrible. I am not
Hey, Todd, you and I
not trained.
are I guess you could say brothers from another mother from that perspective, because we both have the same issue when it comes to that. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about the minute before?
You cut, yeah, it cuts
At an
off right as he's about to say, I want you to tell her that,
We'll have to wait until
end of the
tomorrow.
minute.
You know, don't want to. We want people to come back tomorrow and listen. If you tell them now, they'll say, "Oh, I don't have to come back."
I'm not gonna tell him
Oh,
now, you know, but I'm just saying,
okay.
it's like it was like the perfect moment. It's like they ended it right there, knowing that you need that hook to come back in another 35 years and listen to the next day of Movie Rob's
There you go.
podcast. They did that for
Thank you.
you,
Thank
Rob.
you. You are 100% right on that. There you go. So, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get to the script?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, so the script has a few minor changes, not many, but you know, when Hans tells his plan, basically, he says in the script, "When they touch down and we blow the roof, they'll spend a month sifting through the bodies and rubble. By the time they figure out what went wrong, we'll be earning 20% like nice fat capitalists." So he has the nice fat capitalists added, and he also says that they're going to be sifting through the bodies. You know, I get.
I can just hear Alan Rickman doing that capitalist line. I can imagine that.
And the only other thing that I want to say about the script from this minute is that, you know, they have a direction here in the script saying McClane tries walking on his foot. He winces in pain, clearly at the end of his resources. So, you know, Bruce did a nice job with that direction, I guess you can say.
Yeah, we get plenty of
That's
that.
right. All right, so every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger movies. So, what have you got for us, Todd? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Number five was a tough one for me to settle on, because I realized there's several of these I hadn't seen in some time. But I went with Cliffhanger for number five.
Okay.
Number four, Jay will love me for this, Con Air.
Well, once you said that, I knew what the answer was. Once you said John,
yeah.
Jay will love you or hate you that it's that it's number four.
Well, yeah, he might hate me that it's number four, but you know, at least it made the top five. But yeah, Con Air is fantastic. Number three, I'm going to go with one of the other airplane ones, Air Force One. Number two would be Under Siege, and number one has got to be Speed.
Ooh, Speed! All right, great.
I do want to give out a shout out though to the worst Die Hard doppelganger, because many years ago when I was on a podcast about worst movies we've ever seen, this made my list. But Skyscraper, starring Anna Nicole Smith, is
right. I was going to ask you which one, because there I know that there are two Skyscrapers, so yeah.
No, yeah, not the Dwayne the Rock Johnson Skyscraper, but
which wasn't that great
original
either.
Skyscraper. Yeah, it's, well, I mean, at least it's got Dwayne the Rock Johnson in it. I mean, I always say, even if the movie's not terribly great, he makes it entertaining on a certain level. But the Anna Nicole Smith Skyscraper is one of the worst movies I have ever seen, and I highly recommend everyone watch it, because it's one that is, you know, it's just a fun experience for all the wrong reasons type of a thing.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. So you want to tell people, Todd, how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my blog is Forgotten Films. It's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. The podcast is the Forgotten Filmcast. You'll find links to it on the blog, as well as, you know, if you check your various podcatchers and things like that. And then I'm on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe any podcatcher I'm using to listen to the show. Finding me is quite simple. All you do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.